We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning, I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director is Kyle Mabry. Well, dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are back with us this morning as it is the first Friday of the month. Carol and Jim are with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They join us on Focus on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs. Listeners, your questions about dog care, behavior, and training are invited. You can join us with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Good morning. It's good to see you.
And it's good to see you. As always.
Welcome back.
I can't believe it's December.
Yeah. It's my brother's birthday.
Oh, is it?
Today.
Well, wish him a happy birthday.
Huh? Happy birthday, Tom.
Tom. Happy birthday, Tom.
Yeah. Is Tom the one that pulled that, what was that stunt that we pulled on you a couple years ago with your brother's assistance? I can't remember.
No, that was Ken.
Oh. I can't remember what we did either.
Ken,
it was funny
Kenny's
at the time.
Baby.
It was funny at the time, but I can't recall what it was.
Yeah. I have a question for you. When did you begin training dogs?
6:30 this morning.
Well, I remember when I was little, and we lived at that time in St. Joseph, Missouri. We were there for a couple years, and the library had a book on dog training, and I checked it out, and I was maybe fourth or fifth grade, and my family dog and I did it. It was fun.
Uh-huh.
It was great fun.
And then when did you start to work with the dog training club?
Shortly after we moved here, I adopted a dog from the shelter. And it was this gentleman to my left that was listed as the person to call. But he wasn't really the person to call, so he very kindly redirected me. And that would have been back in the late 80s. And shortly thereafter, I joined and never look back. It's been great.
Yeah. So when you first got connected with the dog training club, then you went to be a student with your with your dog.
Exactly. Yeah. And I couldn't believe that I had done this in Chicago. I had gone through dog training classes with another dog in Chicago. And I was so happy to find that we had an organization here. And then doubly delighted to find out.
If it's for me, I'm not here.
And what about you, Jim?
The first dog I trained formally was in 1972. Evil Roy. Might have been 73.
That Roy?
Yeah.
Wow.
Evil Roy Slade. He was a big dog.
Was it a male?
He was a Malamute. Robin began obedience in 4-H back in the early 60s, just as the Earth's crust was cooling enough that you could go outside
so like
and
Carol,
train a dog.
She got a very early start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there was no dog training club. We started it somewhere
in
around.
In the 70s?
It had to be the late 70s.
Well, we incorporated in 77. But there was an informal group for several years before then. And we finally had enough people that we could do a not-for-profit corporation and have bylaws and all that kind of stuff instead of, hey, I found a place where we can train. It's the old IGA building in Mahomet. So we'd all go out to Mahomet, and we had permission, and we had floor mats that, you know, we folded up and we would take. It was kind of like guerrilla dog training. Wherever we could find a place, that's where we did it.
And now you've got a beautiful facility.
Now we have a fabulous facility.
Yeah, we do. I started in the old building that was out there. It was adequate.
Mm-hmm. Was out there near
on
the
Cunningham and
Lincoln?
Mm-hmm. No.
No, Cunningham and.
Well, I don't know. What is that? Cunningham?
Cunningham and the interstate.
Yeah. It was adequate, mm-hmm. but we were pleased moving to this new one. Mm-hmm. So now we're all grown up.
You know, when I did the promo for the program today, I talked about treats and bonding. And I said in the promo.
Oh, I heard that. I thought you said bondage.
No, I said, Jim.
We have nothing to do with that.
I was wondering, you know, how quickly does the bonding process begin between dogs and humans, whether they're pups or whether they're adults?
I think it depends on both species. Some dogs bond instantly to people. Some people take a while to bond, especially if they had another dog. Sometimes it might be a little bit difficult. But you can bond within minutes. So you see at the shelter quite often where people just will be smitten with one dog in particular, and in turn, the dog is smitten with them.
Right back.
So there's a lot of variables involved, but I think, and the breed, I think that comes into play too, but pretty rapid.
Yeah. Why don't you put your headphones on and we'll take a call. This is Focus, and this morning we're talking about dogs with dog trainers, Carol and Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm. My name is Celeste Quinn. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free 800-222-9455, and the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Our first caller this morning is joining us from Champaign on line one. Hi.
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 Just to back up a little bit, the first dog training really organized in Champaign-Urbana was started in 1952.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did. And it went sporadically here and there and the other place until Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana got founded and we had something that was regular, and thank goodness at last.
I wasn't even alive in 1952.
Well?
Well, I was, I guess.
Too bad, but anyway, that was in Champaign-Urbana, that's the date of the beginning.
Well, thank you, Sue, for that.
Yep. Eugene Jacobs and Doris Rivera were the trainers.
Oh, I didn't mean to say there wasn't any dog training.
And the first classes that we went
to. We didn't have a dog training club.
Were in Eisner Park over off Church Street. And from there, it went to hither and thither and yon. And I was so pleased to see a club form.
Yeah,
okay?
Okay, well, thanks for the call.
Okay.
We trained out at Lake of the Woods in one of the pavilions and literally passed a hat around. And everybody threw in a buck, which in those days was a lot of money. You could get 4 gallons of gas for a buck.
Oh, gosh.
And, but it cost $10 a night, I think, to use the pavilion.
Like a group of nomads, and they finally found.
No, we were mad. Don't get me wrong.
A group of nomads that finally found a place to settle.
Yes, Mads. Well, coming up next month, it's Train Your Dog Month. Carol, you want to tell us about this?
I got this information from a friend of mine who is with the Association of Pet Dog Trainers and also the local ASPCA and the Association of Pet Dog Trainers, APDT. Is proclaiming January to be National Train Your Dog Month. And their premise is basically it's fun to do this with your dog. It's fun. It's also, you know, within our club, it's a social event in many ways as well. As people training their dogs, they become good friends. It's why we have so many members. But training your dog is fun, and it's good to let people know that it's socially acceptable. It's a great venue for you and your dog and your family. The benefits are innumerable. And so I just thought I'd bring that up today. So that's January 2011.
Yeah, and I have a little piece of paper here that you handed me at the outset, and it says, "We want dog owners to see how simple and fun training can be and how patience, consistency, and a deeper understanding of a dog's behavior can lead to happier, healthier, and harmonious household. It's our goal to promote using training methods that are kind, gentle, and have an emphasis on building a relationship with your dog.
See, and I think that's key, the building a relationship. You know, it's a partnership out there, the two of you, and it's just beautiful to see these relationships develop, you know, and people get more at ease. Because I always teach the beginning level. So I get a lot of first-time dog owners when they've got a new dog, and to watch that trust and relationship build, it's a nice thing to see.
Yeah. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Piatt County on line 4. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I have a question, and I like the discussion pattern that you people have, so I just want to ask honestly. I have a small dog who is just 2 years old, and we have a great relationship, by the way. She's pretty well behaved. But when people come to the house, she does those annoying small dog things, I think, is that she jumps on them. She's so happy to see them. She's so happy. And I just, everything that I've read, I've looked at different dog training books, and, you know, I think they're assuming maybe that I have more control than, I mean, the idea that you would be very firm with her and she would sit until the people pay attention to her, the people who have come pay attention to her. And one book suggested that you give the people a treat, and then they don't pay attention to her until she sits, which is, it seems impractical to say to people, just a minute, would you take this treat, and I'll give it to my dog, and she sits, and then come in, and who are you? So I just really question, is it worth it to, since she is well-behaved and happy, and, I mean, are little dogs just going to jump? Is that why people don't like them?
Do they jump on the people, or does she jump on
the person's leg, and she jumps on the person's leg and wants attention very much.
What if when they're seated, does she want to get in their lap? Or?
Oh, yes, and we pretty much can take care of that by the sit. But when people first come, she's just so excited that a sit, you know, does nothing.
And what is she? What breed is she? Or mix?
A Yorkie.
We were mentioning Evil Roy Slade earlier. Mm-hmm. At my very first, very, very first dog show, the last exercises, you line up, all the dogs in your class line up for a sit, stay, and a down stay. And Roy was next to a Schipperke, and he'd never seen one before. And he looked at me, and I said, sit, and that's fine. And I said, down. Well, Roy was 120 pounds, let's say, and the Skip was 10. And I said, down to it, but he said, arf, which meant I'm not going to be put in a submissive position next to this little dog. And he got up and left. Well, this is 1974, I think. And people didn't know. Anyway, I describe it as Moses parting the Red Sea. Roy left. He got up and he just left. And people got out of his way. And he found Robin. And anyway. That's my Skipper's Key story. We just had a litter of puppies about 2 months ago, and I was noticing last week, Carol points the scabs on my hand from the puppies, and they're Malamutes, and they're already bigger than your Schipperke, and they're jumping. Yep. They're jumping up, and I didn't teach them to do it. My attitude up until actually a few weeks ago was people actually train their dogs to jump on people.
Oh.
You don't mean to, but that's in effect what happens. But as early as maybe as soon as the dogs are able to stand on their rears, you know, and have the strength and coordination, they're jumping up. I think it has something to do with puppies, you know, wolf puppies trying to get the adults to regurgitate food.
I hate that theory. It makes me gag. I hate that.
You know, dogs eat poop, too.
I know, but I'd like to think they just want your attention. They don't want you to regurgitate.
Well, it's a greeting ritual. And when mom and dad come back from hunting, the puppies run out and they jump on them. And they try to lick their mouths, which will cause the wolf to regurgitate. But it's I think that's what they're trying to do with you. So if you throw up, the dog will quit bothering you.
Yeah, that's something that wasn't mentioned in my book.
Yeah.
No, I doubt you'll find that in any printed material.
First of all, ignoring a dog can be effective. It just takes forever. Secondly, you're right. to say you don't control the dog, but you do control the circumstances of the training, which is to say, don't wait until somebody comes to your door at random, a friend or something. Arrange to have, you know, your cohort stand outside, knock on the door. You know, perhaps you could have telephone communication and say, now, you know. But it doesn't have to be that sophisticated. And what's the dog going to do? The dog knows that when there's a when it hears this knocking, why, that means there's somebody at the door. It's learned that, so they run to the door. Why? Because they want to greet them.
Yes.
Greeting means, for a Schipperke, jumping up. But I have to tell you, I've got a dog now, Rudy, who's 110 pounds. He's taller than Robin when he stands up, and some people came to see him last week, and he's jumping up on them. Now, we haven't trained him because he's not exactly our dog, but even, you know, totally untrained dogs, Malamutes of any age will jump up as a greeting. So you have somebody knock on the door. What you should have, I always say, have a rug or a mat, something, and you're ready, okay? There's a knock at the door. You take out your Skip's food and take it and put it on the mat. And, you know, don't make a secret about it. Say, here's your food. Or you don't have to give them their regular daily meal, just a treat, and put it there. And what we're trying to do, the knock on the door, the dog has learned, is a person. So there's a stimulus response. Knock, 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 run to the door. What you're trying to do is redirect that. Knock, 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 run to the rug. Because you're going to get food. Or it doesn't have to be a rug. You can have them run to the kitchen, you know, or something like that. Teach them to sit there or lie down there until you say, you know, you can get up. You can teach them to sit or lie on the mat without anybody being at the door. I mean, that's a separate thing to teach.
Okay.
But teaching them to run to the mat or run to the kitchen or whatever, you have to have a partner. Whenever you're training a dog, and by the way, the reason I always say this, it's not exactly true, but you can't teach a dog not to do something.
Mm-hmm.
You can only teach them to do something that's incompatible with the behavior you don't like.
Okay, I can see how I can do that. That's true.
And let me tell you, my secretary at the office, I told her to do this, and about a week later she said, oh, it works, it works. I said, of course it works. Who do you think you're talking to?
Okay, well, I'm going to try that. Thank you so much.
Okay. You're welcome.
Well, call us back next month and tell us how it all worked out.
During dog training month.
During dog training month.
Train your dog month.
Whatever.
Six of one, half a dozen of
nomenclature.
Another. So what do you do, what's the advice then in terms of when you come home, the dog owner come home and the dog wants to greet you? Would you want to practice the same kind of training when you enter the home? No.
Yeah, you should have, well.
I don't.
You can.
No, but
we don't.
Yes.
Our dogs are confined until we let them out. Except we always have a couple house dogs, but Malamutes are not guard dogs. You know, you come and you go. They don't care unless you got food.
And my dogs are thrilled to see me. They jump on me, and I really don't care.
Yeah, if you're a dog person,
they're happy that I'm home.
You're happy to see them.
I'm happy to see them. My arrival home in the evening means they're going to be fed very shortly. I know I'm not dense. I get that. But I enjoy that interaction of affection.
Well, people will say to me, Jim, you're a dog trainer. How do you teach a dog not to jump up? And I always say, why would you want to do that?
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
And even in class, if the student doesn't want their dog to jump, I'll respect that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you turn and walk away. And it's an entirely different environment. But if they, you know, but I have very few people in classes that object to their dog jumping on them.
Yeah.
It's always somebody else.
Well,
a
Schipperke is one thing, but a Malamute or a standard poodle is another thing. And depending on who's coming into the home, you know, it could be your grandmother or...
Oh, sure. Those are excellent scenarios to use.
Or a four-year-old. You don't want them...
Yeah, and in that case, a house line or something is beneficial so you can control a little bit better the situation and the dog's response. And a corollary to that would be a dog that is very people aggressive, and you've got somebody coming in the door. So how do you deal with that? In that case, you don't want the dog greeting the person, so you would have them on a house line or a way to contain them. So it's just kind of the opposite situation.
We have a person in our club with Newfoundlands who had trained her dogs to stay only in a certain part of the house where they lived. And they had, I looked at this the first time I went over to their place. I thought, this is dangerous. It was a white rug, wall to wall. And I thought, Newfoundlands, which are big black dogs, the hair must discolor this. But no, they would run up to the line where the rug ended and the hall began, and they wouldn't cross it.
Yeah.
They didn't have the problem of these big dogs jumping on people because... Not because they trained the dogs not to jump, but because the dogs were trained not to go beyond
that
line.
Not to go into that living room area. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a friend who had a white carpet wall to wall like that, and he had a Cocker Spaniel, and the dog was trained to go. The dog had the run of every place in the house except for the living room. So the dog would come and stop right there. It was really wonderful to see.
And it's not abusive or anything.
No.
It's just...
It's not that hard to teach.
It's just something that, you know, you both agree upon.
Consistency, right?
You know, back to when we were talking about the dog training club, and Jim mentioned Robin starting in 4-H. 4-H in Champaign County is very big. And they have... And there's a dog obedience program within 4-H. And they train at our facility. So if you have... a child, a son or daughter, niece or nephew or whatever, somebody that would like to get involved in dog training, because we don't offer classes for children, although children are welcome up to a certain point. But going through 4-H in Champaign County, they can get into a dog obedience program. They've got little kids that come, and they're great.
And they all have a whole, it's not just dog training, it's dog grooming, dog care. I mean, it's a whole
It's an intensive
project,
program that lasts several months, and the kids thoroughly enjoy it, and we like having them there.
Yeah.
So
I would have loved that as a kid.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Mm-hmm. But it's a way for your young one to get exposed to. And Jim's right. They go far, far more in depth than just dog training.
This is Focus Dog Trainers. Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are with us this morning. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this morning with questions, comments. We'd love to hear from you. Phone calls are welcome. So, too, email. The phone number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL, and the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's take a call from a listener on line one, someone on a cell phone this morning. Good morning. Hi.
Good morning. I hope you can hear me okay.
We can.
Okay. I have a 15-year-old golden retriever, and he's absolutely the best dog in the world, and he has hip problems. And, you know, he bunny hops, and he's not really willing to go up and down stairs too much. We give him Dosaquin, a maintenance dose of Dosaquin, or Dosaquin, however you pronounce it, and we're wondering... If there was something else we could do for him?
We have a couple dogs, and what they're getting. Jared is getting Duramax, I think. He gets a half a Duramax a day. And we have kind of a spread out place, and but he has to go into the basement to get fed. We feed all the dogs in the basement. And so there are some stairs he has to negotiate. But if things got really bad for him, we have runs set up in the garage. And that way he can run in the yard, and then we can put him in his run without him ever having to go up and down a stair. If you can do that, you know, or at least minimize his stair travel, that would be good. And there are other... There are a lot of drugs, and you should talk to the vet about pain maintenance drugs. It's not unusual for a dog that's 15 to be a little weak in the rear. The question is he just weak or is he in pain? I mean, those are you can have a dog that's weak in the rear just because they're old, but not necessarily in pain.
You know, fresh air. Last week, was it last week or the week before? Had
that's right. Forgot about
Dr. that. Nicholas Dodman on with his new book. It's just mm-hmm. old dogs. I can't remember.
Yes.
But he was very, very good to listen to. And if you can go to Fresh Air and find the archived program, I'd listen to it. And I would probably pick up his book as well. It was very practical advice.
I think it was Good Old Dog. Was that
I can't remember. I knew Old Dog was in the title, but I can't remember
I'll
what it was.
I'll look it up. His name again, Carol?
Dr. Nicholas Dodman, D-O-D-M-A-N, okay. Who's got quite a number of very good books out there, by the way. Mm-hmm. This is his most recent.
It's about older dogs mm-hmm. and care. Gee, what else? That's really about all you can do.
There's Rimadyl, Etagesic. I don't know what else is out there.
We give the dogs aspirin as well.
Yeah.
We do as well.
Yeah.
325 milligrams every
But I think
morning.
He probably needs more. Is it Cosequin that you're giving him? What was the medication you mentioned?
Dasaquin. D-A-U-S-Q-U-I-N.
I'm not familiar with that, so I'm sorry there. But you might want to talk to your veterinarian about something that would be a little more helpful.
I see. And then the other problem we're having is he's kind of losing control of his bowel and bladder, and
yeah.
he'll get up from his bed and have a spot there. And
yeah, and Dr. Dodman addresses that very
issue.
Yeah,
he talked about that on Fresh Air.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Sounds like I'll have to get the book then.
Yeah, okay.
Or you can listen to the broadcast.
It was very good.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you much.
You're very welcome. Next, we take a call from a listener on line 2 in Urbana. Hello.
Hi. I am calling with a question about separation anxiety. My fiance and I adopted a dog from the Humane Society when we moved here about 3 months ago. He's a dachshund mutt, and he's been great, but he gets nervous when we both leave for work. And he seemed to have gotten adjusted to the work routine a little bit, but we recently traveled for Thanksgiving, and he came with us. But I don't know if he got spoiled because we spent the week with him every day or what. But he's gotten a little worse and resorted to, like, chewing at the welcome mat and stuff like that. And so I was wondering if you had any tips of training behaviors or techniques we might try.
He chewed your welcome mat?
Yes.
That strikes me funny for some reason. I don't know why. But is that all he did? He didn't injure himself? Was he crated and tried to get out?
He didn't injure himself. We haven't been crating him because he had adjusted pretty well. The only thing he'd done is he'd scratched at the door a little bit in the past, but he'd mostly hadn't seen that behavior at all after the first, like, week or two of having him, and it wasn't really destructive, and now he's just going at the mat and just chewing it up. When I come home, the rubber's spread all over the floor, and he's not going crazy on anything else but just the doorway and that mat.
I don't know about that. I don't know
if that... Yeah, it doesn't sound like separation anxiety.
No, it sounds more like he likes to chew on that mat.
Or as the technical term, I think he's bored.
Oh yeah,
There's another thing about adopted dogs, and usually it takes a few months for their real personality to come out. And by real personality, I have no idea what I mean. But as they get more comfortable with their new surroundings, and especially with a rescue dog, they figure out that life is going to be stable, and they're not going to be here and there and everywhere. Then the little quirks in their personality start to come out. If he's chewing one thing, when you said separation anxiety, you can get dogs that, as soon as you walk out the door, they're whining and crying and they're tearing at the walls and they're biting themselves. And, I mean, that's what's his name, Abrams? Or he's written several books on separation anxiety.
I don't remember that
but this
name, but
more sounds like a dog that is now comfortable with the situation and has nothing better to do. Does he have toys that he can play with besides the mat?
Yeah, he hasn't gotten too into his toys yet. We have a couple different, we've tried a couple different things, a rubber chewy, some plushies that squeak and stuff, and he will chase them. When we come home, he's super excited, bouncing up and down,
mm-hmm.
and I'll try to redirect his energy into chasing one of those toys a little bit. Other than that, when we're home, he tends to relax after we've been home for 10 or 15 minutes.
Oh, sure. That makes it. You know, squeaky toys and everything, I think a lot of those are for our benefit because we think that they enjoy them. They don't play with them when we're not here necessarily.
Calm.
Yeah.
But there's a product line that's excellent when it comes to interactive toys. It's Premier. And Premier makes the Gentle Leader and other products, but their dog toy line is remarkably extensive and very good, and it's interactive. And the one that has been around forever, and I've always got some at home, is a Busy Buddy. Now, a Busy Buddy, it's two discs that screw together. You fill the bottom with it, just the ordinary kibble, screw the discs together. You've got the capability to make it as difficult or as easy as you wish, so start with easy. And they can roll that around the house, and kibble falls out, and they love that. Now, that's just one example. They've got other things on the market that are all – I look them up online. They've got – and there's a lot of other interactive toys, and that's what they really like to keep from being bored is something
that sounds great.
Yeah, instead of the little squeakies and all that stuff that we like.
Do you have any pets besides the dog?
It's just him right now.
There's this encouraging sign right now.
I always recommend when you have a dog that's kind of bored or lonely is to get another dog. Not everybody can have multiple dogs, and certainly not at the level I do. Or you could get a cat. I was thinking of a cat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the reason is two dogs don't make a right. No, two dogs are twice as destructive. But if you have a cat, they're not going to be as destructive, although now that I say that, I remember when we had a cat years and years ago, we were students, and we had two dogs and a cat, and the cat used to knock my clothes on the floor, and the dogs would
Why
tear them apart.
Why did you ever put your clothes away?
Well, Robin.
Last month, the same issue, remember?
Yes, well, that was a problem. But the cat, as I recall, caused as much problem as the dog, so maybe that's not a good idea. But if the dog was lonely, getting another dog or another pet, maybe even a goldfish.
Or leaving the TV or radio on during the day to WLL.
Of course.
Would that be good?
Radio, yeah.
Yeah, and do that. Because,
but the toys are a good idea.
Yeah, the interactive. And then there's a... Once you start to research that, you'll find a million other ideas that are creative and safe and that your dog will enjoy.
Great. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this morning. This is Focus. Dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel are with us this morning. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Jim and his wife, Robin, have Malamutes, and they raise Malamutes. And Carol has a Golden and a Doodle, and I hope they're well.
They're doing great. Actually, this month will be Andy's anniversary when I got her at the shelter, when I found her there.
How many years has it been?
Five.
5 years. Wow.
Oh, it seems like yesterday.
Time goes by so fast, but it'll be 5 years this December, and she makes me laugh every day. Yeah. I love her. Love them both.
How many pups are in this new litter?
Six. One went to Denver, so we're down to five. And we have a fairly large pond. It's about 100 feet by 50 feet, and it's fairly deep, certainly deeper than a puppy. Well, it froze over because it's cold at night. And this morning when I let the puppies out, of course they run out on the pond, and they're not heavy enough to fall through or anything, but it scares me.
Yeah.
I spent about 15 minutes, puppies, come on. And, of course, they're not trained for it, and they don't know what puppies means. They've only been here for a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
So next time I'm going to go out, I'm going to get dressed before I run out and stuff.
That's the hazard of having a water feature in your yard. It really and truly. I remember it was years ago, but Tracy fell in the pond, and we had to fish her out, and it was very frightening to me. She was too old to get out. She never showed any interest, but there, it's the same thing that Jim mentioned. It had a surface, I think a crust of snow or something on it, and she wasn't able to discern that there was that pond that she knew was there. So,
yeah. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Hi. I am just wondering if anybody there knows where one can get a hold of a herding ball for herding types of dogs?
No, but
online should be able to find something.
Yeah, I would think online. We get I always assume everybody gets what we get, but we get a lot of
catalogs
from pet supply people, and probably a pet supply store will have.
Yeah, and you know, we have so many friends in our club that are herders.
Yeah.
They would probably know where to find
them. I'm hoping one of them is listening and will call
Let's
in.
Let's hope.
But yeah, we have several people that herd their dogs.
I wonder if they'd have something like that at Farm and Fleet or Rural King or one of those places.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Mm-hmm. Give them a call.
I've tried a couple of the pet supply stores locally, but I haven't gone to Farm and Fleet.
Well, the pet supply stores are...
That would be too specific for them.
Yeah, the places we're talking about are like national warehouses that have, you know, stretchers for dogs and needles, drugs, and just everything related to dogs, horses, cats, and all the equipment you can think of. And those are the kinds of places. Pet stores locally are, you know, they're into whatever is volume. And they're really not supply stores.
Do you have the names of any of those companies?
Boy, I'm sitting here trying to remember.
I'm thinking of Pet Edge, but that's one of my favorite. But that I don't think
Pet
I
Edge.
Can't recall Pet Edge.
Foster and Smith.
Foster and Smith, that's a good one.
Yeah, they're up in Rhinelander, Wisconsin.
We
go sledding up there, and we go through Rhinelander. And
isn't there one called
Cherrybrook Farms?
Yeah, that's another one.
I don't know if they have equipment. They have drugs and drugs. I mean, pet drugs.
And if you go online and if you just put that into a search, I just did that, and there's all kinds of things here. There's even on YouTube you can find videos for herding balls and dogs.
If you don't have a computer at home, you can go to the library.
Right.
And do it that way. But that's a big help.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Other calls are invited, are encouraged. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. You may also join us by email, will-talk@illinois.edu. Dog trainers Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana are with us this morning. They join us on the first Friday of the month in the 11 o'clock hour of Focus. My name is Celeste Quinn. Kyle Mabry is our technical director, and the producer for the program is Harriet Williamson. Well, I did a search for herding ball, and, you know, they're big.
Oh, yeah, they'd be big.
Yeah.
They would be large.
20-inch ball at 7 to 10 pounds.
It's not meant to be picked up and carried anywhere.
No, it's perfect for the medium-sized dog that wants to roll toys with their shoulders.
And you can use it for yoga or something, right?
I think so.
Exercises.
Oh, yeah.
I think Pilates, is that used? I don't know. See, just another little, tiny little, oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness, have we got calls coming in?
Well, we've got herders on the phone,
I
believe.
Oh, I hope so.
And as soon as Kyle gets a moment here to get, he's really hustling now. Okay, Kyle, we're ready to go with a listener on line one. In Lexington, Illinois.
Hi there. I've got a rescue dog. He's a combination lab and shepherd and hound, and he's very intelligent. And the first few months were quite an experience. But now what we're down to is a problem that's really kind of keeping me more around the house than I'd like to be. I have an electric fence, a large area for him to run around the house. We do live in the country. But when I like to take him out of the fence at least once a day and walk him in the middle of the section, kind of, let him run free. And when I try to come back in the house, if he doesn't want to come, obviously he's not going to come. Now, he minds perfectly inside the perimeter of the fence. But outside, I can't necessarily get him to come if he doesn't want to. And the main problem that I'm concerned about is that he doesn't understand cars, and there are so few of them that go by out here that I don't really have a, you know, I don't know how to train him on them. If a UP or FedEx truck happens to come and he's not inside the fence, he will rush off when they leave through the woods and meet them out on the road and run in front of them and slow them down. And just he's playful. We're guessing he's probably about a year and a half old. But so the two problems is not coming outside the perimeter and not, you know, I'm afraid he's going to get hit by a car.
And unfortunately, it only takes one car, despite the small amount of traffic
you've got. So,
I would, when you take him outside of the perimeter of the fence, that's the electric fence.
Pardon me?
When you take him outside the perimeter of the fence that you've got, and you have him on, you take him out of there with the leash on, right?
No, I don't, because I'm in the middle of a double country section.
Okay, so but when you leave your home, you leave with him on a leash to walk to that section.
No, we just go right out the front sidewalk and under the driveway and turn left. He knows the route.
Okay, then I'd put him on, and you can get a long lead, a flexi lead, or whatever.
Okay.
And then when you're out and you're ready to go back, then call him to you if he'll come at all. Have treats.
I've tried that. He doesn't necessarily because he's smart enough to know.
Yeah, but this is what I want you to do.
Okay.
If he comes to you, snap on the lead, take a few steps, take the leash off, and let him run again.
Oh, okay.
So he doesn't start to associate the leash, which you should probably walk him on anyway, just that until he's got this down pat.
Okay.
He associates the leash or you calling him and you're going back inside and fun's over.
Okay.
So just kind of, you know, surprise him with that and see what happens.
You're being too consistent.
Okay.
Call him 10 times, treat him 10 times, and the 11th time take him back.
Okay, good. I'll give that a try.
Yeah. I think you'll find that helpful.
And he is a smart dog.
He is.
Oh, yeah.
What about the car thing?
You should keep him on a flexi.
Yeah, I wouldn't let him
off. We used to live in a house south of Ivesdale, and if you know where that is, it's in the middle of nowhere in Illinois, and the people before us had a Samoyed that ran out, and the one car that went down that road every day hit it and killed it.
Mm-hmm.
So we just never let our dogs run loose.
Well, okay. So you don't have any... See, the thing is, if he happens to get loose, and I mean, I don't know. I was just hoping there would be a way to teach a dog.
No, and you know, the FedEx trucks and the UPS trucks and him running in front of them is very dangerous.
Yeah, I know.
He's not necessarily being playful. There might be something in his genetics, and he's maybe hurting in a way. But if he gets out, driving in the country, this happened to me just a couple years ago, driving in the country, which I am scared of anyway because I don't know where I am. But dogs came out and were chasing my car, but they were like right next to it. I was terrified I was going to hit one of these dogs. Obviously, I didn't, but I thought I couldn't live with that fear every day. I would never let mine run.
I know. Well, it's just on the rare occasion he gets out. It is very rare, and I watch it very, very carefully. But I was just hoping there might be something, you know, in case
you could
to teach a dog to fear or avoid a car somehow, but I guess
there's theories out there, but you know, I don't know if they'd even work.
Okay, yeah, I know it's a difficult problem, but I'm sure that will work.
Years ago, I had a friend who let her dog run loose all in Urbana all the time, and I said I thought this was the clinching argument. I said, "Oh, you shouldn't do that. He'll be hit by a car."
Mm-hmm.
And their response was, "Oh, he's been hit by a car already."
Okay.
And I went, "Oh my gosh."
Yeah.
It's like anyway, they learned, but they don't seem to, do they?
No, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't understand cars, and I don't know any way to make them understand them.
Yeah. Okay, well, I appreciate your advice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next, we take a call from a listener in Champaign on line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
My question is a behavioral one, and I was visiting some relatives in Florida who had a Jack Russell. And when I was hanging up my clothes, in comes Hannibal, runs over to me, raises his little leg, and piddles on my foot. And I asked if this had ever happened before. No. I've asked several times since. Did it ever happen again? No. So the question is, was I being welcomed to the family or told to go home?
Well, how old was he at the time?
Oh, I don't know, 7 or 8.
Oh.
He was well-trained otherwise. I was housebroken, never any problem.
I'd take that as a compliment, wouldn't you, Jim?
No.
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 But I also wouldn't, you may have stepped on something that you didn't realize.
Oh,
and,
really?
And
oh.
Your shoe smelled of that. And it doesn't have to have a lot of...
Oh, like she stepped in dog poop?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Or dog pee. I mean, it doesn't have to have... And I've noticed my dog sniffing my tires a lot.
Oh, that never occurred to us. That might be something like that.
Yeah, and what he's doing is this is only a theory, of course, but he smelled it. It was something that he would outside mark, and mm-hmm. so he marked your foot.
So he was marking his territory.
Well, he was responding. It's not mm-hmm. exactly territorial, but if one dog leaves a calling card, every other dog that goes by will leave a calling card at the same spot.
Okay. Well, thank you for explaining that.
And see, she hangs up her clothes. She doesn't leave them strewn around the room.
Right.
Thanks for the call. Thanks
You're
for
welcome.
The call.
Hi.
And next we take a call from a listener in Pontiac, line 4. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about a cage hound. My daughter has one, and I periodically keep my grandpuppy. And she is very hyper all the time. She's not well leash trained. She tugs at a leash till you think she's going to choke herself to death. I've tried the leash where you put it, you know, more on the muzzle thing, and she's just got a mind of her own with it. So I don't seem to be able to wear her out physically, you know, in order to get her to be tired enough to really calm down in the house. And short of putting her on drugs or me on drugs, I really don't know what to do with her.
I was going to say, maybe get one of those yoga balls.
Well, how old is she?
She's about 3 now. So,
oh, okay.
I was really hoping the puppy stage would go away. But they both work, so she's crate trained and goes in her crate when she has to. She's got a Bichon as a mate, pet playmate, and but she's just if I sit down with her, the Bichon and I have one are just wonderful for look, I'm going to sit down and they'll shut the energy off and just lay with you and stay there until you're ready to get up. But I can't seem to get her to calm down enough just to sit on the floor beside me.
Well, you know, if you look at the Bichon, that's a breed that's designed to just chill out. It's a lap dog.
Right.
It's a toy breed.
Right.
And the Keeshan, if you ever watch them, because we have several in our club, they're very active and lively and... And,
well, they're companion dogs, too, but mm-hmm. for the Dutch boats that go down mm-hmm. the canals.
I can't imagine her on a boat because she's off of it every minute.
With regard to pulling on the lead, first of all, she's not going to choke herself. If she starts to gag, she's lying, okay? She, in other words, she knows how to press your buttons. What I would do, and one effective way, but it takes forever, and somebody referred to it earlier in the program, put her on a lead, go outside, she'll start to pull. Don't move. Just stand there until she doesn't pull. Then start walking. Of course, she's going to start pulling again. Stop again. And only walk when she isn't pulling.
Uh-huh.
And now that might take she might pull for a half an hour. You know,
and you walk all of 10 feet.
Yeah, it takes time. But once she gets the idea, and it won't take a half hour, that pulling doesn't get her anywhere, she'll stop pulling.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have trained, not professionally, but I've trained some other dogs. I've done foster care with our local humane society before, and leash taught dogs, and I've had really good luck with Caesar's horse, the dog whisperer thing, and trying to work with leash dogs in that manner. And I've literally done those. I've literally gotten to the point where she will actually stand there and gag herself for 10 minutes. And I've also gotten to where I will take my hand and do the act like I'm biting the dog with my hand, you know, to get her to be a little bit submissive with it, you know, just the pressure with the hand, and brought her down to laying on the ground and sitting there until I decided to walk again. I think part of the problem is that her ruff is so thick.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
You know, that she's not, she doesn't seem to be at all sensitive to pressure against it. And I've used
But apparently she's gagging.
Yeah, yeah.
So that doesn't sound like that could happen if she weren't somewhat sensitive.
Yeah,
she wouldn't gag.
I think she's lying about it.
And remember that Caesar is on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Because I watch him, too, and I'm like, oh, God, he's always making that and the dog's just like, okay, whatever you want. It's
and you have to remember that the 80-20 rule applies here. And 80% of our techniques work on 80% of the dogs 80% of the time. That's why we try different things. But
I'd still go with a gentle leader despite your hatred.
Well,
of
if I don't hate him, but if you have a dog like this that keeps fighting it, I think it can be dangerous.
Have you used a gentle leader on any other dog aside from this one?
We have to wrap up.
Oh,
actually.
We're done?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
she's gone.
Yeah. Maybe we'll hear from her next month when you're back. January 7th, 2011, when it will be Train Your Dog Month. How about that?
That'll be excellent.
All right. Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm, they're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. They join us on Focus on the first Friday of the month to talk about dogs in the 11 o'clock hour of the program. Well, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and we'll see you in 2011.
Thank you.